You know, I told my players a lot this year, you got to keep basketball in perspective, because when you take out the bigger purpose of life and what matters when we're at the end of our life facing Jesus, putting a ball through a circle is not that important. It's a lot of fun. It's fun to work hard and compete, and you learn a lot of things from it. But at the end of the day, there's something bigger.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who've experienced the life-changing love of Jesus. Stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives. Stories of His Glory podcast is grateful to Copper Dog Waffles and Coffee for their support of FCA and youth athletics. Copper Dog is located on historic Main Street in Mandan, and has the best gourmet waffles and custom coffee drinks. When you go, try my favorite, the Rookie, and definitely try pairing it with one of their amazing coffees. Stop in today for a unique experience, something unlike anything else you'll see in North Dakota. Sweet or savory, there's something for everyone at Copper Dog in Mandan.
Welcome to today's episode of Stories of His Glory. I'm your host, Ryan Jungling, and today I have the privilege of sitting down with Jordan Williams, FCA area rep, teacher, and basketball coach. Jordan, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know you are a huge fan of interviews, so I'm sure this is going to be a lot of fun. No, I am super excited. I think this is going to be a lot of fun hearing your story, and I know your story, a lot of it, but for other people to hear your story is going to be really great. Yeah, let's start here. As we live life, sometimes quirks or little known facts about us, you know, those people that are closest to us, they like to point them out. So any of those exist for you? And then the second question to that is, how does that reflect the way God made you?
Sure. Yes, yeah, so my wife, marriage is a huge blessing. I tell a lot of people in my Bible studies that it's hard, but it's great because they see you probably better than you see yourself. And sometimes they reveal things in our walk that we need to know that we don't know. So sometimes I get caught a little off guard. A couple of weeks ago, my wife just said, I got to tell you something, and didn't really know what it was. And she's like, well, maybe I won't. Went back and forth. She's like, well, just something I've noticed about you. And so I finally, after some persuading, got her to tell me. And she said, you just always seem very confident in what you say that it's right. And she's like, and I don't know that you always know whether it is or not. It's like, I don't know. She's like, you should think about that. And so I found myself the next couple of days, like when I would get asked a question, I'd just get my answer and I'd assume like it was fact, even if I wasn't super well informed on it. And I'd catch myself, like I never had any idea that it all before that. And I caught myself numerous times over the week. It's kind of become a running joke with us now. Are you sure? Or are you just really, really think that? And she's like, sometimes you just believe it's fact, even if you don't know. So I'm working on that. I'm working on, you know, being a little slower to speak. It's a good thing for me, for my wife to reveal it to me too, because it's also a thing that I need to, you know, in ministry, we need to be slow to speak and quick to listen. It's great sometimes to say, I don't know, or I'm not sure, let's figure it out together. And so that's been a question that's come up with my kids a lot. I said, here's what I believe, here's what I know, let's dive in and see where it says it. And it's good. But again, it's a truth that I wasn't really expecting to hear. It was a truth that hit the nail on the head, and it is affecting me now. But it's also odd. I've never heard anybody ever be told that before.
You could ask me this question. I probably wouldn't have come up with this one because I feel like I have quirks. I feel like quirks abound for me, but that has also been a discussion in our house before with my wife. Was like, hey, you're very confident in things that you're not necessarily sure of. I don't know. I think it's something maybe to do with coaching too, right? Being in a position of authority where people look for answers.
And you got to be quick with your decision and you got to evaluate quickly and make what you feel is the best decision at that time. And sometimes you're flat wrong.
Yes. And that does provide an opportunity to admit it, right? If we're willing to do that. Yep. So that's really cool. You talked to her wife. Give us an overview of Jordan's family today.
Yeah, I got an amazing wife. We've been married a little over 11 years now, 11 and a half. And then we have four kids. I have Micah, who's 9, Aaron, who's 8. And then I got my son is 5. His name's Truett. And then we have a 2-year-old Ella, who kind of runs the show. They're all very, very different, which is kind of neat. Sometimes, you know, they get along really well. Sometimes we joke that they're frenemies, but it changes quick. But no, it's just a really neat dynamic. They're all a different stage of life, and they're starting to, I'd say, start to adapt more and encourage each other more than before. And they're kind of all in different places in their walk. Micah's on fire and is a little evangelist. loves to share the gospel, and they were outside there down the sidewalk leading up to Easter, handing out things down at my wife's in-laws to people walking by, wanting to know about Jesus. And Aaron is starting to get a little more bold and talk a little more and have more questions, but isn't quite as a deep intellect yet on it like Aaron and then, or Micah. And then Truett just loves learning about it, loves learning about Jesus. And Ella just gets things a little misconstrued yet, but she'll tell you Jesus loves you. She's great. She'll just say whatever's on her mind very authoritatively. But no, so we got the four of us. It's been great. We could spend time together, and it's been neat to see God moving in all the hurts. And then my wife loves the Lord a lot. She's got a very simple and pure faith. Just wholeheartedly trust Him when it's hard, and it's very inspiring to me. Also very challenging because I have a tendency to complicate things really, really well in my heart and my mind. And she just has such a neat faith where it's just like, well, this is God's will. You know, I'm going to trust Him. And so it's been great. She helps me grow a lot and challenges me, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. As a professional now, like I said in the intro, you work for FCA part-time. You are a part-time teacher at a school in town. You are a basketball coach. And there's a lot of things that are happening in the life of Jordan Williams.
Absolutely.
But one thing that I think is really cool over the last 3 years working with you has been how much you focus on getting your priorities right. And we don't always do it perfectly.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast that I think this is a message that just keeps needing to be reiterated over and over again about priorities, especially in the world of athletics and the world of faith in athletics. And so why don't you just talk a little bit about that, what kind of your view is, how you go about that?
Yep.
Because it is very seasonal as well, what it takes to keep your priorities right.
Yeah, I mean, my life changes a lot. I always joke with my wife, I'm bringing more stability and not have things change a lot, but build houses on the side. We move every couple of years. We've moved a lot. You know, I coach high school basketball. I've done that for 16 years now, 2 years of college before that, which is, it changes the season all year. It's kind of all year round. You know, you have stuff to plan for, do. But the biggest focus on mine, I guess, is continue to grow in my walk with Jesus is everything's relational and everything's a platform. And if we ever lose sight of that, it's really a waste of time. You know, I told my players a lot this year, you got to keep basketball in perspective, because when you take out the bigger purpose of life and what matters when we're at the end of our life facing Jesus, putting a ball through a circle is not that important. It's a lot of fun. It's fun to work hard and compete, and you learn a lot of things from it. But at the end of the day, there's something bigger. Same thing building houses, like try to develop relationships with all the subs of you. You know, like we build a move every couple of years, and it's an opportunity to dig in their lives, you know, and to bring them water, bring them food, like just stop and talk to them for a while. Like we have an opportunity to live missionally wherever we're at. That's what we're called to do. Just listen to the sermon. It was a couple of weeks ago and talked about we're not all called to missions, but we're all called to live on mission.
Yeah.
And that's what we talked a lot about in my coaching studies this year. It's changed my priority of why I do things. It's given more depth and purpose behind them. And you see a lot more fruit, but it also has become easier for me because of that to start putting some boundaries up too and prioritize time. Our first mission field, obviously, is a dad and a husband is at home. Yeah. And that's something I've been trying to prioritize more with a lot on my plate. Because if I fail there, I failed it all. You know, I don't want to be surface level. But yeah, so just my purpose behind everything, like I'm really competitive, probably one of the most competitive people you ever meet. And so when I first started coaching, it just solely was about winning. And as I grow in my walk with Jesus, like winning's great, but like we were talking about Esther 4 with my Shiloh kids here and before some state game, we talked about even if, like fear will always make us wonder what if and ask what if, and faith will always push us towards even if. And so we talked a lot about at our pep rally and got to speak there, like even if we don't win the next game, or even if we do, it doesn't change God's characteristic. It doesn't change that He's good, you know, and we can't live in fear of saying, what if we don't make the next shot? What if I don't get this job? That's an opportunity that's built in everything we do. No matter the season we're in, to accept that failure is okay as well, as long as God's glorified in it. But it forces us to live humbly as well and forces us to live under His submission, you know, which is a lot more freeing than not. So it's spilled in every part of my life, you know, of how do I challenge people where I'm at? How do I be filled where I'm at? And how do I make an impact where He's placed me?
Yeah, that's really the ear tries to get us to think what if, right? But faith says even if. That's really cool. To ask maybe a practical thing for the coach, what have you found during the season when life is chaotic and life is busy and you're up early, you stay up late? How have you found, in particular with your kids, the ages that they are, where they're around the house a lot, 9 to 2, what have you found practically that has helped you to still invest time in the life of your kids and your family that puts them above, however you can, puts them above basketball.
Coffee helps. So you can stay awake more the time you have. I just try to be more purposeful this year, specifically when I was looking for a head job. And it's kind of the deal I made with my wife for a long time is it can't interfere. It's kind of provide me more flexibility in my schedule to be a dad and not take away from that flexibility because I get to control the schedule now. And so that was a big part of it. My Charlotte kids were awesome as they grew in their walk and their Bible study a lot. And I got to start bringing my kids around and they were fantastic with my kids. And that meant a lot to my children. I also would give my wife a little break, which was much needed too, because I'm gone a lot in basketball. Just, you know, like involving my kids, praying for my players with my kids, tell them like, hey, a Bible study, here's what we're going to talk about. And, you know, and here's some of the things that were said. What do you think about this? So that they feel like they're engaged with the team that we're doing missionally as well. And then having a recap with my kids, you know, like we have a game. We didn't play well. Like, yeah, that stinks. You know, let's go learn from it and see if we can get better. And if, you know, like, and do the best that we can. And ultimately it got still good. You know, like it's just a game, you know, but to encourage them in those conversations that the same conversation I'm having with my players. I'm competitive. I'm driven. I like to be really busy. And so it's always easy for me to let's put more time in. Let's watch more film and try to get better about not doing that when I'm at home, putting some boundaries up there to be present. And then we did things where we have specific time with our kids, you know, like my son and I had a Father Sunday where we went out, well, two of my girls with their aunt and we had a day together. It was a lot of fun. We go to the gym together, like just trying to specify a set time. We're going to do something. Let's play a game, watch a movie, and not just sit around. That was trying to be more purposeful during the season because might not have as much quantity of time. So it's got to be a lot more quality.
Yeah. And you got to bring at least one of your kids on a road trip.
Three out of four. Three would even made it. It was a little, he's a little energetic ball. We had to find some areas for him to run. But he came to the Hazen trip. Micah got to come on two. And then Aaron came on a trip as well at Beulah. Micah took the two longest trips to Oak Grove and the Four Winds. Just wanted to sit on a bus with her dad. And I thought she was going to read because she could read for hours on end. And she barely read both those times. Just liked hanging out and really enjoyed it. And that's just neat. Like the parents were really supportive of that. You know, my kids on the bench, they'd help with the whiteboard. They get in the huddle. For two of my kids, we drew up a new play at the start of the game and named it after both of them. So the whole team's yelling out their name. One of my daughters didn't hear it. The other one didn't like that very much. Didn't like the attention, but my kids loved it at Shiloh. They thought it was awesome. Two of my kids are really shy. And so it took a little while for them to warm up around. So it was a running joke and who get a fist bump first. And it took several days for a lot of them. It was just neat. You know, they get to be a coach's kid and not every kid gets to do that. And it can either be where their dad's never around or it can be where they get to go with their dad and have an experience most kids don't get.
Yeah. That's super cool. That's super cool. I grew up a coach's kid and I was always around.
Yep.
And there's a lot of power in that. And it's a pretty cool experience. So it's really cool that to just hear the stories that you keep sharing about that intentionality because it really, really matters. You can finish your drink. There you go.
I'm good.
Let's go back to Jordan in his younger years. What got you started in sports, in athletics, and share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I started basketball before I can even remember. I remember playing as a kindergartner, playing first grade Y ball, because that's what was available. My brother started a couple years before me, so that I think probably sparked it and just really enjoyed it. Tried other things, tried T-ball. That was fun. Next year they started pitching, and that was the end of it for me. I didn't want to get hit. Tried football in middle school and I was really, really small and had a couple of good games because fast. And then second time I went down a hole, went north and south instead of trying to go all the way around. And I got lit up so hard, I didn't run through a hole the rest of the year. So football didn't really work out. Track, I couldn't stand because I like being busy and you sit around a lot of track meets. Did cross country to get in shape for basketball. I'm one of the worst long distance runners you've ever seen in your life, but it was a good challenge. I built a lot of mental toughness running, but I just grew up loving basketball. It was challenging for me because I was small. And so I had to put a lot of time in and just got better as I got older, started with a lot of injuries. And so I would say I probably thought I was a little bit better than I was, but you know, like I eventually found my identity in it, which was at that time, I didn't realize what was going on. And you know, I grew up in a Christian home. My parents shared the gospel with me numerous times, went to a great Bible preaching church in town here. And I knew the gospel over and over again. I knew a lot about Jesus growing up, but I can, as I've grown in my walk, realize I knew about Jesus, but I didn't know Jesus. The only thing I served for a large majority of my life was myself. And, you know, as things weren't going my way in athletics, went from, I was 5'6" as a sophomore, got dunk on a bounce, as couldn't even touch the rim as a senior because of the injuries. And, you know, I just started struggling as a person of, I thought if I wasn't playing well, I couldn't move because my knee was blowing up. Then I just struggled with, you know, my identity, myself, my self-worth, and struggled and started pursuing like anything I could to make me feel better about myself. Instead of just pursuing Jesus, and was never happy and just kept pursuing basketball demanded the energy because I like playing, you know, and thankfully later on, God also used the same thing to break me and realize, hey, like, this is your God and you are your own God. I'm in control, not you, you know, and a blessing now to have that, restoring it to meet kids in the same situation and point to something different, because you play better when there's not the weight of the world on you. But then to also just say, hey, like, I'm going to share Jesus with you because we both love basketball. It breaks down a lot of barriers. You know, it's really been really cool. But it got redeemed in my life. But yeah, I mean, it became my love and my passion at a very young age. You know, elementary, middle school, I'd be on a driver for several hours a night. High school, I could drive. I'd be at the YMCA for usually about 4 hours a night and then go lift. Became semi-social hermit, you know, and just struggled. And struggled to feed myself, I think would be probably the biggest way to say it. And by God's grace, he kept me humble by not getting too much praise through injuries and whatnot. But yeah, I love competing a lot. I think it reveals a lot of character and it helps build character, you know, and helps people deal with failure, which we're going to fail in life. It's just a challenge. I like having something before me that I'm not supposed to complete and to get that done and find a way. To me, it's really, really rewarding, but it's not nearly as rewarding as when I started walking with Jesus. And so it's been neat to merge it together.
Stories of His Glory is brought to you by North Dakota Fellowship of Christian Athletes, where our mission is to lead every coach and athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. Across North Dakota, FCA is on the ground in weight rooms, huddles, and classrooms, building up bold leaders of faith through sports and scripture. Whether it's a student athlete discovering Jesus for the first time, or a coach finding strength in community, lives are being changed every season at FCA. Want to be a part of the movement? Visit fcand.org to get involved or support the mission. Now, let's get back to the story.
So you played high school ball. Like you talked about, you had some pretty serious knee injuries. You tried to play in college, tried to play in college.
I was on the team. I always joked with my high school kids. Like, I was on the team. I wasn't good enough. I think I got in one game as a freshman at varsity level, but I got to learn from some really, really high level coaches because of that. But yeah, I never played in college. I'd say more, I was just around.
Yeah. But you got an opportunity to coach, right? Yeah. And you get to be around really great coaches.
Absolutely.
And then you got an opportunity to coach when you were still in college.
Yep.
And so for you, was coaching just an easy step to transition from playing to coaching because you were competitive and you loved basketball?
I think, it was a good transition. It was a nice gateway. I always wanted to coach. And when I realized it, just like after my first knee surgery, they told me I was going to be done. I had my patella reconstructed. And a patellar tendon, and it helped ease just the hard news of knowing, okay, like, I was hoping I could have surgery and keep playing, and it's going to get me back to being more athletic and, you know, have a little more bounce. And the reality is like, okay, we fixed this. Now you're not going to be the same. And then to have God open the door where I got asked, and I transferred schools to a school that we had beat, a Division II school we beat when I was at Mayville, and got asked to be on staff there after I tried walking on, couldn't pass physical. And so I got to my first foot in the door for getting a coach under Stu Ingen, which was awesome. Awesome dude, great family man, which is not super common in college athletics. And to see that was really, really, really neat. And then transitioned to get to coach at Century High School, Darren Madden, for 15 years. I learned a ton from both of them. Even when I was at Mabel, get to learn from Craig Smith, who was at Utah last year as the head coach.
Yeah.
All had different philosophies, all did different things in a good way, all their own. And to get to kind of take all that and merge it in and say, here's how I want to do things has been fun. But coaching to me has been a lot more rewarding than playing ever was, because it takes the spotlight off of me. Mm. And it's fun to see somebody else succeed.
Yeah.
You know, and it just breaks down a barrier where you say, like, I always joked to my Century kids of like, I'm here for you. You never hear anybody talking about a JV coach.
Yeah.
You know, nobody remembers a JV coach. So I'm here for you. And there's just a trust that's built there. And you get to invest in kids instead of investing in yourself. It brings a different joy. I joke that I think I'm a better coach than I was a player.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to move.
Yeah.
You know, but it's more relational, you know, and you get to be as competitive as you want, you know, and as much as your kids want to be. But no, I've enjoyed the transition a lot. I think it gives an incredible amount of influence and platform that I didn't have as a player, that I didn't maybe boldly speak out about because I wasn't sure where I was at, that I now get to use and just have an impact in a way that I could have never imagined.
Let's go back there and kind of bridge. We were talking about kind of your athletic journey. You hinted at this, but, you know, you grew up in a home that you knew Jesus. You had him in your head.
Yeah.
You knew the facts, you knew the things, but in your heart was really, you know, how can I glorify myself?
Yep.
And how can I glorify myself through sport and in all the things? How did Jesus intersect that?
You know, I grew up saying the sinner's prayer a lot of times. And to be honest, as I was younger, I probably more so looked at Jesus as a get out of hell free card.
Yeah.
But then that's all it was to me. So like, I just was really empty. There wasn't a relationship there early on. but I continued to learn about them. And there was just a disconnect. As I got older in high school, I didn't know what was going on at the time, but I started realizing now, looking back, that the spirit started moving and started getting convicted of things in my life, things I was doing, things I believed, things where my heart was at, any of those things, and then things I placed before God instead of having him on top of all things. And I started reading the word, and just diving in the word had a profound impact of God then moving in my heart, not hearing somebody preach the word, but actually me reading the word. And I didn't know what was going on, but like just started feeling like, man, like this needs to change about me, or I shouldn't pursue this anymore. It's taking up too much time, or this is wrong. And I just started seeing my heart change, and not really everybody know where it's coming from, but being in the right area to have it changed led to me getting baptized in high school then, you know, still figure out my walk. And then it led to me just kind of tiptoeing the line of trying to figure out, how do I walk with Jesus at college? And was blessed with the opportunity when I was waiting for my knee surgery, my second year. They were national runners up my sophomore year, and I was waiting for me to switch around my patella. And so I went down to Panama City Beach for spring break with crew. And there's a guy by the name of Rick James that spoke down there. That was a moment like everything like clicked of like, here's everything you've been wondering. Here's how it all merges together. You're saved for more than just being saved. You know, you're saved for something bigger, saved for God's glory and his purpose. And he was speaking on storing up treasures in heaven. I was going through some hard things in my life at that time and struggling with not getting to play anymore. And there's just a lot of things in the fire. And I just remember just bawling and just realizing like, man, nothing in my life will be forged in the fire. It's all going to burn away. And it's just like that aha moment where I was like, I've wasted 19 years of my life and I want something that lasts. I'm going to start investing in things that are going to be eternal. And to be honest, I never really thought about it before that point in my life. It just hit me like a bag of rocks. And just remember breaking down there and being, God had faithfully placed a lot of people in my life to start discipling me and pouring into me as I left. And as I moved again, then he put new people in my life to continue discipling. It was really neat how he had his hand in it, but it was just really eye-opening. And, you know, it was a really depressing, but also like freeing moment of like, I've wasted it all, but yet I have it all because of him. It's changed my perspective on everything I do since then. You know, it changed basketball since then, you know, and get to play again and stuff, not, you know, in there at the same level, but like made it fun again. You know, because life had more purpose and had more depth outside of myself. And so that was a big turning point in my life. And then the men that God placed in my life to disciple me, there was a handful of them, depending on where I was at, just kept growing. That I think is a huge area that we just miss.
Yeah.
We miss out a lot in our church and in America that we share the gospel with them and say, sweet. And then we leave.
Yeah.
And like the guys that walked with me for 8, 9 years of my life after that, there were about 4 or 5 of them that had a profound impact on my life that shaped me for who I am still. Yeah. You know, and yeah, I mean, the discipleship part is to grow with someone else who's been through things, different stage of life, that's older than you, or at least older in their walk than you are.
Yeah.
Point in the right direction, help you sort some things out. And then to say, hey, even in my struggle, here's how God's good, like when it's hard for you. And then to just grow in the depth of knowledge and to see, not just be disciples, but they walk with you. And so you get to see what it looks like in their life. And like, hey, my life should look like that, you know, if I walk with Jesus, and it gives you a model of how to live, you know, how to seek out people. You know, so that kind of all merged together with that. And obviously it's changed a lot of my life. The process of sanctification, sometimes it's been swift and furious, and sometimes it's been slow in some areas. And God's still obviously moving, but there hasn't been a whole lot of areas in my life now that haven't been touched of at least my purpose or vision being changed and why I'm doing it, or just don't do it at all then. To simplify motives, you could say, and still growing, still imperfect, but definitely widely changed.
Yeah. And so you had that moment, had that transforming moment where, just like you said, nothing would survive the fire. Wouldn't be forged in the fire, it'd all burn away. And not wanting to waste it from that point on. And, you know, to have people in your life that invested in you. And you in turn to turn and do that. And I think something that's so important, right, is not just that other people are pouring into us, but that we are as a responsibility as a Christian, right?
Yep.
To make an impact on other people.
Absolutely.
And I know that whether it was formally or informally, you have been in ministry now, probably since that day at Panama City Beach.
Been involved a lot.
Because it is how your heart beats and how God has created you. We graduated high school together.
Yep.
Didn't know each other super well. We knew who each other was, but didn't know each other super well. But over the last 3 years, as you've worked for FCA, I've gotten to hear your story a lot. And one thing that's really cool is just how God is so faithful in his timing and in his sovereignty that you were doing coaches ministry on your own.
Yep.
Well before you were on staff with FCA.
Yeah, I was leading a small group that just kept growing through my house. Kind of started a little bit before that. I was involved with Crew a lot. And Troy Shirley, and he had a huge impact in my life. And then I got to disciple some really awesome athletes, OU Mary, through him.
Yeah.
And it just was on my heart. I wanted to have a bigger reach. And Bob Goff came to our church. And the man and I went to that. And he's talking about, I was just struggling with, like, I have a heart. And getting new sports ministry was awesome. But I have a heart to reach more. And Bob Goff talked about maybe it's not getting called to somewhere else. Maybe it's addressing a perspective. He said that night when he's talking about this book that came out, he just said, maybe you just need to seek the Lord and say, I'm in the right area, but I'm focusing on the wrong thing, and just seek him. And he gave the white note cards, kind of like back to college ministry. And he's like, you need to write on here what God's put in your heart. And I just remember writing on there that maybe I'm not called just to reach athletes one by one, but I'm called to reach coaches so that they can reach their athletes too and have a bigger impact on Bismarck and Mandan. And so shortly after, I started reaching out to coaches that I was already individually seeking, just wanted to have the same joy that I have. And it turned into Mastarza Spall Bible study and quickly grew into a lot of coaches and then fled into UMary somehow and had some UMary people coming out at our house and got to do that for a while. And then my wife and I started having a fair amount of kids fairly quickly, which took a lot of time. I joke about that. She really loves me. And it's like, I need more time if I'm going to do this. And so, you know, I had a season where my ministry kind of slowed down. Like, I'm trying to follow up with guys one-on-one. We'll have a family while coaching, while working, while building houses, while trying to be a husband, and wanted to look at I got approached by two different FCA directors, like, hey, you should join staff. I prayed about it. It didn't seem like the right time. And then I got approached by another one, but there was a waiting period to be able to join staff to free up more time to reach coaches. That's where my influence is at. That's where God's given me a platform and connections with people, and I've invested in for a long time already. And then a lot of things, like, you come on staff and a late night with Nate Safe at our house till 2 a.m. and talking about, like, what's the vision and here's my heart. And then all of a sudden everything fell in place at the same time. And God's timing wasn't my timing by any means. It very rarely is. If you ever look in the Bible, it's never about when we think it's the right time, but it's super clear. You know, I've been trying to discern that for a while. Am I called to do ministry? Am I not? Am I called to just do what I'm doing right now? How long am I called to ministry? I really like to try to figure things out on my own and pre-plan all my life. And it's been a little freeing to try to get away from it a little bit. A lot of things just inevitably fell in place and he provided. And then when it looks like he's not, he provides again. He provides again. And then the fruit of it's been really, really neat. And now it's neat to start seeing people that I've gotten to pour into now pouring into other people. I've got one on my staff that came to the Lord, that these were my former players and coaches a little bit, who came to the Lord Jesus, got to share the gospel, met Little Caesars, took him out. I had a lot of money at that time, so we had the $5 large we split back in the day, or $5.99 here. And now seeing him disciple people and disciples family and new missions, and like, it's just neat to start seeing it come full circle. Kind of like when you coach people and all of a sudden 15 years later, you're starting to coach their kids. It's kind of the same feeling. And so it's been really neat. It's kind of merged a couple of things that I really enjoy and do. I still get to coach and I get to tell kids there's more. And I get to tell other coaches I coach with, there's more. Let's use this for a purpose bigger, not just winning state championships. I tell my kids, like, I've gotten to do that several times. It's great. And it's fun. And then you wake up the next day and life goes on.
Yeah.
You know, so you either get ready for the next season or you find a bigger purpose, you know, or do both. So it's been neat. As God called me into ministry, to have the time to go sit down with coaches like I did this morning, just dig into their life and get to talk about Jesus, how he's changed my life, and point them to Jesus and just meet them where they're at. Some people are ready to hear right away. Some aren't. And some things happen over a long span of time. And it's like, the longer it takes, the more rewarding it is, I feel like, when something finally does happen and God starts peeling off some layers. But all of it's been really, really joyful. I think it's been just huge for me in my walk too, of making sure I get to live missionally and having the time to do so and encourage others to do that where they're at.
Let's make this practical for somebody else, because I think God has gifted you in this realm. You are crystal clear on who your target is. And for you as coaches, and for somebody else listening, it probably isn't coaches. It might be. And if it is coaches and you have a heart for coaches and you're like, hey, this ministry thing sounds good, we have space. Yeah. We need people for sure. But if it's not coaches, somebody's listening and they're like, you know, I really feel called to reach my coworkers, to reach my neighbors, to reach X, Y, or Z person. What have you found that, like, what's your strategy and how you do that? Like, practically, to give some steps of, like, here's what works for Jordan. It might not work for everybody, but some people might not even have a place to start.
Yeah, I think it starts by being different and being okay with that. I first have to have my walk going well.
Yeah.
And in times where I drift, so does my ministry. Mm-hmm. It's less fruitful. You know, also I think just living differently, living for different things, my language being different, the way I conduct myself being different, the priorities I pursue after being different, you know, that automatically, I think, brings up some questions. You know, I've told my players the last couple of years when I was at Century, when the guys got the disciple and the small group we had, and then at Shiloh, I tell them, and the reality is we're all leaders and we all have followers. You might not know who's following us. Yeah. I told my players, you might have some elementary kids following you because they think you're great. And I said, by default, we're all leaders. And I said, we're either going to point them to Jesus or by default, we're going to point them away. And so I think just living intentionally of no matter what I do, I'm leading somebody right now, you know, whether it's getting my sandwich, you know, for lunch, or whether it's coaching, to wherever God's placed me at whatever school or employment I have, like he has placed you. You're the only person he's created in that moment to have an impact where he has you. And when we internalize that, know that, and the gospel's moved our heart, we just want to start reaching out. And as we develop missionally based, purposeful relationships, typically people talk about themselves. And so when I have a conversation, especially with people that I'm starting to meet, like I am very intentional about trying to talk about what Jesus is doing in my life because it's brought joy. And frankly, in the world right now, there's a lot of people looking for joy and they're seeking a lot of the wrong places. And so I just get to bring that up and be like, well, you know, what'd you do? It's like, well, I got to meet with some coaches. We talked about Jesus. I picked up a sandwich the other day and they thought I was getting an extra one for my wife, which I do sometimes. But it's like, oh, you must have a date with your wife for lunch today. I was like, no. I said, actually, I'm going to meet with a coach right now at school. And the guy said, why? And I said, well, I do sports ministry through FCA. And I said, I got a guy that I've been meeting with for a while. He wants to talk with Jesus. He's trying to figure out what it looks like to walk with Jesus. And so he's going to take him to lunch. Yeah, that's my job. And the guy's staring me forward, like, that's cool. That's Subway.
Yeah.
You know, so like being quick to speak about Jesus, not as much about herself, but what he's doing. And that's the biggest way for me. I realize that breaks down barriers. Because if I walk in the room, like, man, you shouldn't be doing this. If I'm the prophet Nathan walking up to David and calling him out, obviously I worked by God because he had ordained it and was going before us, but that doesn't work with a lot of people unless you have a good relationship with them. But if you ever walk into a relationship with somebody and say, here's what's being convicted in my life, it opens a door for the Spirit to move in their life without putting up a guard, without putting up walls. And so having the humility to talk about where I'm struggling with people and being vulnerable and having intimacy, telling them how God's being faithful and changing those things, how he's giving me joy and purpose, and just being quick to speak about what he's doing and taking the, I don't say pressure, but taking off the perspective or focus on me, just cracks open a lot of conversations. And then, you know, we're blessed with being on staff at FCA. You know, now when I meet with coaches, they kind of expect it. And I've even had coaches who I've met with over the last couple of years who aren't rocking with Jesus, but I have a great relationship with, and they want to know, well, how's that FCA stuff going? You know, what do you do with that? What do you actually do? And it just cracks open the conversation, like, let me tell you, you know, and then it just opens a door and a curiosity in their heart and it just allows the Spirit to move. God goes before us in all ministry things. But, you know, we're just called to be very missional and very open in our walk. And we're called to live in community and to be intimate in community. I think in America, we have this pride level. I'm going to do it on my own. I don't want anybody to know my faults. I don't want peer weak. And that's one of the biggest hindrances to walking with Jesus. And so just doing that alone of being humble and being open, it's just countercultural. And then you see a response from them that they see you have peace and you have joy. And you don't have to put on a front. It just leads to a lot of questions. It might not be right away. It might be when a trial comes up in their life, but then people reach out. It's crazy when you're available and they know you care and you keep following up. So I would just encourage people to be intentional. You know, we did something when I was down training, they referred to it as a circle of influence when I got on staff. You put a circle with your name in it, and then you had to put 3 to 5 names around it that you have a good relationship with, but, you know, where you've been placed to make an impact for life, but they don't know Jesus. And I put 4 guys on mine that I was going to pursue no matter what, as long as I'm on staff. I'm going to pursue them, whether it's weekly, monthly, no matter the outcome, no matter what their response is, and just to give yourself a tangible task. I like seeking out people, but it gave me 4 specific ones. Cool thing now is, of the 4 of them, a couple are walking with Jesus, and all of them are at least having conversations about it now. You know, it took a large investment for some of them. And the answer that I got for a while for some was a response I can't say. And it's just to start seeing all that fall off, you know, being consistent with those people. If you're pursuing something God's put in your heart, pursue him until he tells you not, because he pursues us. You know, he pursues us
for sure.
And we're supposed to mimic that. So I mean, that'd be my biggest thing. Pick some names that you have influence on that know Jesus and be salt to their life. You know, and to be salt, you got to rub against them. Otherwise, salt is worthless for preserving and adding life and flavor. So get your nose dirty, sacrifice. Jesus sacrificed for us. We need to sacrifice to improve other people's lives too. And just speak quickly about God's goodness.
Yeah. Ministry is a contact sport.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
It is relational. I think that's the one of the biggest things that came out in that bit, that it is 100% relational. People will open up when they know that you care about them. And that is something that takes time. So showing you care. And then I think that very practical, like, well, who are the four people? There's a story. I think it's D.L. Moody. D.L. Moody, who had a prayer list of 100 people in his life that didn't know Jesus. Mm-hmm. And his goal was to pray for those people and to introduce them to Christ. And when D.L. Moody died, 96 of them had accepted Christ as their Lord and Savior. The other four were at the memorial service, and at D.L. Moody's funeral, accepted Jesus. Yep. And that is just wild. But that's what you're talking about. Intentional, picking out a group of people. I wouldn't start with 100.
Nope.
Right?
Be a little far, you know, be a little high there.
Start with something manageable, whether it's coworkers or your relatives or your neighbors, and pray for them.
Yep.
Be intentional in their life. Always look for a reason to talk about how good Jesus is.
Yep.
And to, like you said, be vulnerable first. Be the one that opens up. Be the one that shares difficult things. An indicator that I love hearing is, I don't tell a lot of people this, but I feel like that's a marker for, like, relationally, you're in a good place with somebody. Yep. This has been really fun.
Yeah.
This has been great. We're going to have to do a part two at some point, I think. But yeah, just been really great to hear your story, Jordan, and to hear and be encouraged myself. I'm always encouraged when I hear all your stories, because they are crazy and wild. And often I know that it is years and years or months and months of buildup that leads to some breakthrough moment. And sometimes that breakthrough moment is, we talked about it today.
Yep.
You know, we talked about faith. They opened up, they answered a question. Sometimes it's, they got saved, and we praise Jesus for that 100%. But also, we also praise Jesus when that door cracks open a little bit.
He goes before us.
He goes before us. So thanks again, Jordan.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it, and be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify Him.